Hi, I'm Holly Black. I'm the author of the Curse Workers series and the editor with Ellen Kushner of Welcome to Bordertown, and you are listening to the SF Signal podcast.
This is the SF Signal podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester, and I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And this is episode 56 of the SF Signal podcast, an interview show. And this week we interviewed Holly Black. So I'm going to have that here for you in just a minute. If you didn't already check it out, you should go back to Monday's show where we had a panel discussion of what is your favorite alien invasion story. Had a lot of feedback on that, so you guys should go check that out. But I know that you're here for the interview, so I'm going to get right into that. Here we are, me and Holly Black. And tonight I have on the line with us Holly Black. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Patrick.
And for the benefit of our listeners, both the two that don't know who you are, why don't you tell folks who you are and what you do?
Okay. Hi, I'm Holly Black. I write contemporary fantasy, mostly urban fantasy, for kids and teenagers and adults who were really, you know, pretty much anybody who's willing to read it. Some of my books are The Spider Chronicles, the Modern Fairy Tale books, Tithe Valley and Ironside, the Curse Workers books, White Cat, Red Glove, and I've edited three anthologies, Geektastic, Zombies vs. Unicorns, and the forthcoming, although it will be in the past when you actually hear this, Welcome to Bordertown.
Huge market right now for young adult fiction.
Yes, totally crazy. When I first sold Tithe, it was back in 2002 when it came out, and I remember going to a CBWI conference. It's a Society for Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, and I had never been to one before, and I guess people were told to network in the bathroom, so I was on this incredibly like long line for the bathroom, and the woman in front of me turned to me and was like, hi, you know, and explained this networking thing and asked me what I wrote. And I said, oh, you know, young adult books. And she turned around to talk to the person in front of her. Because at the time, you know, it was all about the picture book. I don't think anybody thought of YA as being, you know, very commercial. And in fact, yes, she gave me the cut direct to the bathroom.
You know what? There's two very interesting points that you just made in that. One is the networking in the bathroom, which is completely different from like world fantasy where you network in the bar.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. I prefer, in fact, the networking in the bar, I'd say. But I don't think there's just, I don't think there's a kind of bathroom line situation.
I'm trying to figure out how this would work for men, because men don't talk to each other in the bathroom.
There just aren't. I think the thing about a CBWI is that it is by and large ladies. So the bathroom situation, the line situation is even worse than it is anywhere else. So it makes sense.
Gotcha. The other thing is you talk about, you know, the publishers not at that time thinking that that was a particularly marketable area. Hollywood figured it out with PG-13. Mm-hmm. You know, the young adults have cash to burn. Mm-hmm. And if you can give them something that is going to interest them and engage them, they'll be all over it. You know, believe me, I know. I spent a lot of money on comic books.
Yeah, I mean, as a teenager, I remember... I mean, that probably was one of the boom book buying times in my life. I actually joined the science fiction book club at that time, and I was incredibly bad at turning back in the little thing that told them not to send you books. So I just had so many books. And it was fabulous, though. I mean, I found so many authors that I would have never found. That's where I really got my lifelong love of Tanith Lee. That's where I first read Michael Moorcock. I mean, you know, it was all really during my teenage years when I was really finding the stuff that made a huge difference to me in what I what I truly love to this day, and kind of the kind of writer I wanted to be.
That's awesome. Do you see the folks that are reading you right now, the younger kids, do you see them kind of growing with you over time?
The weirdest thing, I guess, about my newest series coming out, The Kirschberg Girls, was that it's a teen series, but all of my Spiderwick readers are now the age to be reading teen books. And so they will find my books, and sometimes it will take them a really long time to figure out that I'm the same person.
Okay.
Because they read these books when they were, 8 and 9 and 10, and now, at 14 and 15 and 16, they're picking up books, and, they're like, Holly Black, that sounds familiar, wait a minute. And it's really, really so great to sort of experience them in this, in these two totally different ways.
Sure. But that's awesome though.
Yeah, no, it's really, really like sweet to meet kids and have them be like, oh, I really love this book. And oh, I read Spiderwick when I was, it was the first book I read. It was this book I read when I was really young. And
That's awesome.
Makes me feel old though.
Anything that gets them reading, as far as I'm concerned.
Finally I was like, I'm old.
This is the moment. Now, before we move on to other things, I did want to talk just briefly about the Spiderwick stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now, one of the things that interests me is that did get a Hollywood adaptation.
Yep.
Is there... So a couple questions about that. Number one, what was that experience like for you? I've heard from other authors, that when there's like options done on their stuff, they don't necessarily get a lot of input. Mm-hmm. So I'd be curious how that went for you. And are they planning any other movies based on the books in that series?
I don't think that they are currently planning anything. It often, takes a long time. There was some talk, but right now I don't think there's any firm plans to do any more of the Spiderwick films. They did do the first 5 books. Mm-hmm. So if they were going to do anything, they would be working on Beyond Spiderwick Chronicles. It was a really great experience. Tony Giudice, who I did Spiderwick with, and I kind of went into it thinking, we were pretty much on the same page. We love fantasy movies. And we really just hoped they would make a good fantasy movie. We understood that things would have to change. And so we kind of went in with the stuff we really cared about and talked about that. I talked a lot about fairy folklore and about the characters. And Tony talked a lot about why the artwork was the way it was, why the designs were the way they were. And they were great about really listening to us. They let us have our say. Obviously, they had to have ownership of it. The director, Mark Waters, had to have ownership of it and, take it forward with his vision. But he was really, really great about, talking to us. Tony went out and consulted with all the visual effects people. We got to go on the set in Montreal, walk around. And, it was actually a really wonderful experience.
That's awesome. I'm sorry.
And I think the movie was great. I mean, I really liked the movie.
Yep. It's in my DVD collection.
I appreciate that.
So, I mean, it was very, very cool. And, I'm kind of sad that they maybe, aren't going to do something else. But I know that that's also it's hard to get something kicked off there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you planning any more books in Spiderwick?
We're not currently. Both of us are really concentrated on sort of separate projects. We've talked about, maybe someday coming back and doing something else. But right now we have other stuff we're working on for the foreseeable future.
Okay. Kind of like Welcome to Bordertown.
Yes. Which is a totally crazy project to get to do. I love the original Bordertown books. They were, pioneers of urban fantasy. Sort of these books that I read that just blew my mind, when I first read them.
Well, tell our listeners, about that, about the original books, and then, what your project is all about.
Okay, so the original Bordertown books were edited by Terry Winling, and they're a shared world anthology set in a city that's sort of on the edge of Elfland and the world. And they're this sort of punk rock, elves on motorcycles, you know, fairy in the real world, magic not really always working, technology not always working, fabulous books. And they really spawned a lot of the elves in the modern day novels that we see to this day. You know, certainly they spawned my modern fairy tale books, you know, are clearly a direct descendant to some extent. You know, Spiderwick is a direct descendant of this idea of what it would be like if, you know, if this world and our, if our world and the fairy world were connected. And, so anyway, I love these books. And I was hanging out with Ellen Kushner, who was one of the original contributors, I think at an American Library Association conference, and we were at the bar, at least, clearly, you know, and not in line for the bathroom. And she was talking about doing, you know, editing a new anthology. You know, it would be 13 years, I think, after the last one. And I was like, I will chew off my own arm to be able to submit a story for that. You should do that. You should do that now. And she said, well, you know, how about you come and edit it with me? And I was like, and from there, you know, thus it was spawned. She talked to Terry Winley. Terry was willing to give us our blessing. And then we recruited her and made her help us a lot more than I think she intended to. And what we did is we got a bunch of the authors who had contributed to the original anthology, like Emma Bull and Charles DeLint and Patricia McKillop and Will Shetterly, obviously Terry and Ellen. And we also got a bunch of people who were fans of the original who were really excited to write in the world. Cory Doctorow wrote a just crazy, fantastic story in which he wired Bordertown. just absolutely, it was, you know, Jenny Lee Simner wrote this great story about kids who come to Bordertown looking for a werewolf and a vampire to be their boyfriends. And they find just really, like, really, like, it was so interesting to see what new writers brought. And also then what the original writers brought, it was really great. Such experience.
I'm still laughing about that.
It doesn't go well for them.
Oh boy. Yeah. So that's hilarious. How long did it take you to put all that together?
You know, it probably took us a year to kind of get it together that we were actually going to do it. And then a year to actually, you know, put the book together, and it's coming out May 24th from Random House.
Oh, nice.
I just got my contributors copies, and it's a huge, huge book. It's got a lot of stories and also poems and songs and a little comic piece.
And this is, obviously this is it sounds like it's a labor of love.
Yes. And a huge honor.
That's awesome. Hopefully everyone will go and check that out. Now, this is not the only anthology that you've been involved in as an editor.
This is the third. I have co-edited all of them, and I highly recommend co-editing because it is so great to have another person help, you know, sort of just able to pick up the slack when you can't and when you're busy, and also just to talk about the project with. I have enjoyed all of my co-editing experiences. I did, my first one was with Cecil Castellucci, and we edited a book called Geektastic, which was a lot of fun because most of the stories are realistic fiction, and we recruited from a lot of people who mostly write fantasy. And, you know, many fantasy people you may know are kind of nerds, but it's weird. We never get to show that side at all in our writing.
I do it every week on a podcast called The Functional Nerds.
it absolutely is so interesting to get people to, like Scott Westerfeld got to write a story in there about Dungeons and Dragons alignment with graph, with a graph. That was a ton of fun. And then with Justine Larbalesti, I edited a book called Zombies versus Unicorns, in which I defended the unicorn side. That against that other side.
And that just sounds crazy. You had to defend the unicorns against the zombies?
Well, I had to speak up for the unicorns because some seem to believe that zombies are superior, but they are crazy because zombies, they shamble, they smell, they're no good.
Yeah, but I mean, the only thing unicorns are good for is that, have you ever seen on thinkgeek.com, they've got the unicorn meat?
I tried to order unicorn meat. You know, it's a joke. Such a disappointment. I thought it was another of the great things that unicorns can do. I mean, unicorns are extremely extremely useful. Their horns can heal. They're symbols of majesty and hope and probably delicious, but you can't actually order that meat.
Oh, boy. You also have some collections of short fiction. Your own short fiction.
One called Poison Eaters and Other Stories. I was very excited to have enough short stories to put together a collection. I actually finished my first novel before I really was able to successfully write a short story. I found them to be a really challenging form. And so I was really, really happy when I actually had enough stories to put together a collection, because it was really, it was very challenging for me to figure out how short stories worked.
You're preaching to the choir here.
I mean, not that I figured it out, but that I was able to sort of think it through 12. So, you know.
I sat down and decided to write a short story. And I was like, I'm going to conquer this. I'm going to write a short story. 10,000 words later.
You had the beginning of a novel?
Pretty much. It's terrible. It's terrible. You and I have been talking for 26 minutes, and really we've only been recording like 10 or 15. So, you know, trust me, I brevity, not my strong suit.
I like a short novel, but that is not the same as a long short story.
What do you think about the ebook trend?
I think it is great. I think that we're seeing a lot of people read in different ways. I think that people read. It's interesting. I know in the last maybe 2 years, I guess, people, you know, a lot of my friends have sort of slowly moved to e-readers. And it's interesting how I don't think it has so much affected our actual physical book purchasing, but there's different kinds of books that we all buy for our e-readers and different ways we read them.
Sure.
So I think it's great. I mean, I think a lot, I see a lot of my friends downloading books that, classics that are in public domain that they are like, you know, I think I'm just going to put this on my e-reader and then I'm going to read it in a way that I think, and I see people buying series where they're just like, I liked this book. I'm just going to buy all of them right now and read them tonight. Well, that stuff is really interesting.
Here's my joke that I've been telling ever since I bought a Kindle. I bought a Kindle and now I can buy a book instantly and not read it.
Absolutely. Like there's you feel like you've got you've got your e-reader and you're going away. And there's sort of this panicky moment when you're like, well, I have to buy everything that I might want to read.
Ever.
Right?
Ever.
So I think it's good. I think there's ways in which people will buy more books and read more books having them.
What do you think about, now you said, you know, you've got enough short stories for a collection. What do you think about, there are a lot of authors who are taking their back catalog stuff and they're releasing it themselves, you know, through Amazon, short stories, novels, novellas, whatever they've got. It seems to be working for the established author, you know, the folks who have already been published.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and certainly there are people who are publishing that way and getting a readership. So, you know, I think it is an interesting way to to publish, and it seems to be working. I don't know enough about it to speak intelligently to it, but I know people who are definitely doing what you're saying, putting up their back catalog and finding it to be a really successful way to have it reach fans.
Definitely. Is your Welcome to Borderland or Bordertown, is that going to be released as an ebook?
It's going to be, there's a Kindle edition and a Nook edition. You can, and the other thing about ebooks that's interesting is I know a lot of people who you can pre-order them and then they just deliver it to your reader. That is a crazy addictive way to buy the book.
Well, it is the iTunes syndrome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like last year, a little show came on the air. You've probably never heard of it. It's called Glee. And I think a few people watch it. And I loved the music because it's all that classic rock kind of stuff that I listen to that people say, you need new music. And I liked it. And so I, after an episode, I would jump on iTunes and buy a couple songs. And it's that kind of thing, with right. The reader, you see something or you hear something, or people listen to the podcast and they hear me interviewing someone like yourself, and we start talking about all your different books and the Spiderwick and Welcome to Bordertown, mm-hmm. and all these different things, and it is easy for them to just jump over to their e-reader, order it, buy it, boom, they've got it, and they can start reading. They don't even have to get in the car, go to the bookstore and check, and look around for it. They can just get it instantly. Then get it right now. Hint, hint.
Yeah, I think that, and you're right. And then you download it, and then you have it, just like you have all those iTunes songs, or I have at least all those iTunes songs that I'm not sure that I've actually listened to. But I like having them there. It gives me a safe, warm feeling that should I want to listen to them, I can.
So, I'm trying to keep us tight in time. There's so many things that I want to ask you about and talk to you about. So I apologize if I'm kind of jumping around. One of the things that is dear to my heart is comic books.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to talk briefly about your graphic novels.
Oh, great. I think I love comics, and I love reading comics, and I thought since I decided to write novels, I couldn't write comics. And then at some point I realized I can. I absolutely can. There's no reason why I can't also, try my hand at writing and a graphic novel. And so I wrote The Good Neighbors, which is three graphic novels, Kith, Kin, and Kind. And Ted Nafee illustrated them, and I really love his work. I loved his book How Loathsome. I love his Courtney Cromren books and his Polly and the Pirate books. And I was super, super excited that he agreed to do this. It was definitely a learning curve writing that first book. And I feel like going through the series, I've really learned a lot about how you write for that format. Just thinking about things like page layout, thinking about that at the bottom of the right-hand page, that last panel is your page turner panel. And something's got to be happening there that makes people want to flip. Remembering what page you're on. So if you want to have a two-page spread, you have your left and right page, sure, to do it on. And I think that the biggest thing that the two things that I struggled with, one was remembering that when you go to a new scene, you need to set it, because in a novel, you really just start in the middle. You want, constant sort of in media res, and you want to settle people in place, but not immediately. And in this kind of writing, you have to set people visually that you have changed scenes. Something that I was constantly being reminded by my editor. And then just that the size of panels in many ways told you their importance and sort of led the pacing in ways that I don't think I understood when I was first writing it.
Well, the artwork is absolutely gorgeous. So I agree with you there. Why don't you tell people a little bit about the story?
What it's about? Yes.
Yeah. Get them interested.
It's about a girl who her name is Rue, and she her mom has gone missing. She's not really sure what is going on with that. It was after she heard her mother and father fighting. And the police seem to be sort of trying, sniffing around, kind of suspecting her father of having something to do with it. And meanwhile, she's seeing sort of monstrous creatures, and she doesn't know what's been going on. And so she really has to solve, you know, the disappearance of her mother, and along the way sort of stumbles into, a lot of fairy politics, as it turns out that there are a contingency of fairies who are taking over her town over the course of 3 books.
Wow.
Trouble.
Great. Awesome. Which is in. It feels and it sounds like epic fantasy.
I originally was thinking about it. I was reading some nonfiction books about Bridget Cleary, who was murdered about 100 years ago in Ireland by her husband, Michael Cleary, because he thought that she was a fairy changeling. He honestly believed it. He murdered her in front of her family, who also believed it. And they believed that Bridget would come back on a white horse the next day, their Bridget, the real Bridget. And when she didn't, everything started to fall apart, and eventually her father confessed. And the thing about all fairy stories that I find fascinating are two things, and they're always opposite. You know, one, it's always fascinating to me, like, what if it were true? What if there were fairies? You know, what if there were fairies? What would that mean? What would that be like? You know, what would it be like to, you know, to have done this terrible thing, but actually be doing it for the reason of saving your wife? Like, what would that actually be like? And then, you know, the other thing is, what is it like that you could think something like that and have it not be true, and you know, about someone that you care about someone who's supposed to be so close to you? How could you do such a thing? And trying to keep those two contradictory ideas in my head, and sort of having my cake and eat it too, you know, in terms of the story, was the inspiration for writing Rue's story about her mother and sort of her family.
Like I said, it sounds epic fantasy to me. It really does. Have you just out of curiosity, have you read any of the fables?
Yes. Yes.
Do you like that?
Yeah. I think Bill Willingham is fantastic.
That stuff is so cool. You know, yeah. And for our listeners, that's fairy tale characters set in the modern day world. They lost their fairy tale kingdom, to a great evil, and they all kind of fled to our world.
And he makes each of the characters just really, really compelling in their own right.
Yep. Well, we're coming up on the end of our time here. So I wanted to get some more stuff in. Do you have, okay. So the next book you have coming out is Welcome to Bordertown. Do you have anything else on the horizon?
Yes. Well, I have my new series, which I am now on the second book of, which has come out not too long ago. Curseburger series is, they were kind of different for me. As you can tell, I've done a lot of sort of fairy books.
Sure.
And these were different.
And I'm sorry, you said Curse Workers.
The Curse Workers series. Yeah, the first book is called White Cat. The second book is Red Glove. And they are set in a world where a certain percentage of people have magic. Everyone knows about it. They're open fantasy books. And magic's illegal. And because magic's illegal, it's controlled by the mob. So there are these noirish crime fantasy novels, and they're really different than anything I've done before. And they've been, you know, just a huge amount of fun. The main character is this con artist kid named Castle Sharp, and he is he's in private school because his mom was arrested for trying to pull a sweetheart scheme where she's an emotion worker, so she tried to make this gentleman love her and also pay her all his money. So she's in prison and he's in private school, and he's trying to make a go of being in the straight and narrow. And one day he wakes up on the roof of his dorm room. He has no idea how he got there. He has no idea how to get down. And he starts to question how many of his memories are real. And so he has to figure out who he is and what he's done, and whether he's actually murdered the girl he thinks he's murdered. So
magic is illegal.
Magic is legal.
It's being controlled by the mob.
Right. Like as liquor was during Prohibition.
Sure. So only a golem could be a made man. Ba-dum-bum.
Oh, very nice.
So is the first book is called White Hat?
White Cat.
White Cat. Is that out right now?
It is out. It's out in paperback. It's been out about a year, and the second book just came out a couple months ago, I think in April.
Is there any sort of awesome book trailer on your website?
There is an awesome book trailer on my website.
What a wonderful coincidence. That's a nice little segue into what's your website address?
Ah, it is. Sorry, and I didn't even take the prompt. I was like, there is. it is blackholly.com.
Okay, and there's a link there that takes you to the Curse Workers, and then there's this really cool trailer that everybody needs to go see.
Absolutely.
What else is on your website for folks?
Many tips for writers. Many musings on weird things. And stuff about all my books.
And you have a live journal?
I do, which is connected to my website, and therefore I count it as part of my website.
So I like, one of the things I like to talk to authors about is live journal. What's the appeal to you to live journal these days?
Well, once upon a time I was on Blogger, and my friend Cassandra Clare, actually, I blame her. She was on LiveJournal, and she converted me to LiveJournal, and now I'm on LiveJournal. And all my archives are there, and I've been there for a long time. So the appeal of it is I've been there a long time.
And it's just really hard to change.
It is really hard to change. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I like it. I, you know, it's pretty functional. I don't know if it's what I would pick now, but it's, you know, I like the way the comments are. I like that you can customize things. I do like it.
I know a lot of people like that you can still friend lock, and you know, you can have things that are that, you know, if you just want to vent, you know, your editor has been mean to you, your publisher is a snot, and you don't want the rest of the world to know that, you just want to vent to the three really close friends who won't spread that around, you can lock that, you know.
That never works. Here's my advice to you people who think that's going to work. It will not work.
So, okay. So you've got blackholly.com. You've got the live journal. There's a link there to that.
There is.
Twitter, Facebook.
I am on Twitter and, as Holly Black, I am on Facebook. I just moved over to a fan page because that's hit my maximum, and then did that thing where you are like, oh, wow, I guess I can't do the thing I was doing before, and I moved over to a fan page. I still know Facebook baffles me a little bit, but I love the Twitter. I love the Twitter.
I always tell people that Twitter's for, you know, instant communication. Facebook, mm-hmm. You can put stuff up there and people will find it days later.
That's interesting to know. I find it more confusing, strangely. Like, I know people who love Facebook and people who love Twitter, and it seems to me that nobody loves Facebook and loves Twitter. You either love one or the other.
Two completely different ways of approaching information. And for a while there, I was getting on board with the Facebook thing. And, you know, I haven't completely dropped it, but, I mean, for a while there, as it became closer to Twitter, I was liking it. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of came close to Twitter, and then they veered off into this other weird thing that they're doing now. And you've got multiple timelines. You've got your, you know, here's what's happening right now. Here is your most popular. Here is your this. Here's your news feed. Here, you know, it's like, I just want to know what people are saying.
And I think that as interfaces become really more and more complicated, and you can do more things on them and do more things to them, and they sort of topple over. They build this mountain of possibility and then topple over, as MySpace did.
Right. Yeah. That's entirely possible.
Flashing and insane madness.
Are you going to be at any conventions this year where folks can go in and maybe say hello? Are you doing any signings, book signings, appearances, anything like that?
I will be in New York, I believe on June 6th, I'm going to guess, I'm doing a Welcome to Bordertown signing with Corey and with Ellen and with Elia Dawn Johnson and Delia Sherman and some other people that I'm sure that I am forgetting, and I will be at World Fantasy this year.
Oh, so. Very nice.
Will you be at World Fantasy this year?
I don't know. As it is, you know, it's too late to get tickets. I am considering a bar con. My friend Mer Lafferty is going, and she's going to do a BarCon, which is essentially, you know, she couldn't get tickets either. It was too late. They were already sold out. So she's just going to go and sit in the bar. I am considering that. But we, over on the Functional Nerds, we got nominated for a Parsec Award. Mm-hmm. So if we become a finalist, we may end up going to Atlanta for Dragon Con. And I don't know if I can afford two cons this year.
Well, Dragon Con is a good time.
That's what I've heard. And, I've been to Atlanta before, and that's a great town. So, of course, I've also been to Reno before, and that's a great town. So,
you've never been to Dragon Con, though?
I have never been to Dragon Con,
no. The costumes, it's insane. More costumes, really more costumes, and more intricate costumes than you can possibly be prepared for as I say this to you.
Ah, but I have been to BlizzCon.
Is it all costumes all the time?
It is not. However, BlizzCon is Blizzard Entertainment's convention. Mm-hmm. These are the folks who bring us World of Warcraft and StarCraft. And they have a costume contest each year at BlizzCon. And let me tell you, some cool, cool stuff. A friend of mine dressed up as a troll priest. And she found I don't know if you've ever played World of Warcraft. When you die.
Oh, I have.
When you die, you know the little ghost spirit that meets you at the graveyard? Someone dressed up as that.
That's awesome.
And so this lady was there as the ghost spirit, and my friend laid out as a dead troll at her feet. So it looked just like, you know, the scene out of World of Warcraft. It was amazing. People took pictures. That is really amazing. But I think the best one was a lady came, and she was riding a Kodo. And the Kodo was this motorized deal that she could get in it, and it looked like her legs were over the side, and she could move it up on the stage and go back and forth. And the legs moved.
Wow.
It was really, really cool. Yeah. Anyway, so I think that's it. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Was there anything that I forgot? Anything? Any last minute thoughts you wanted to throw out there?
Absolutely. No, that's great.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's great talking to you. And if you go to World Fantasy, I will see you at the bar.
Everybody wants to see me at World Fantasy again, so I may have to get my hat and make that trip later on this year. It's already too late to buy tickets. I know that. They sold out really fast. And that's, I think, because they're in San Diego this year. So I wouldn't be able to do any of the panel stuff, but I am seriously considering a BarCon, which is essentially you go to the convention, you just don't get a ticket, and then you just hang out in the bar, which a lot of stuff happens in the bar at World Fantasy. So a lot of deals are made there, a lot of networking, a lot of connections, and really hanging out with awesome people. Lot of folks that I have met, thanks to this podcast and to the Functional Nerds podcast, are going to be at World Fantasy, and everybody says, you know, hey, you know, just come hang out with me in the bar. So definitely considering that. I want to thank Holly again for coming on. That was an awesome conversation. Had a lot of fun with that. You know, go check out her stuff. Go to her website, all that good stuff. Let's see. Podcast business. We have been nominated for a Parsec Award. Thank you. I mean that sincerely. That's awesome. That's huge. You guys rock. Someone out there went ahead and nominated us, and that's just, you know, fantastic. So thank you so much. We're definitely going to be competing. So it's kind of funny. SF Signal will be competing against Functional Nerds in the same category. But hey, you know what? That's fine. You know, it's all good. It's all one big family. So we're okay with that. Thank you again for that nomination. That's awesome. If you really enjoyed this podcast, which apparently you do, since you nominated us for a Parsec. You can also go to iTunes. If you subscribe there, that boosts our ranking within the iTunes podcast database thingy. What's it, Hooser? You can also give us a couple stars. That helps. If you write us a review, that helps. Just kind of boost our signal within iTunes, and helps us find more listeners. You can also help us find more listeners by telling your friends, you know, say, hey, SF Signal is a pretty cool podcast. Nominated for a Parsec. Patrick is kind of funny. Yada, yada, yada. And get them to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. Let's see what else. If you have any thoughts, any comments, if there's anything at all you want to tell me, you can do so either via the comments on the website or by leaving us a voicemail. 720-277-9082 is our voicemail line. And if you don't want to make that call because it's long distance and some people don't want to do that, you can also go on the website, sfsignal.com, click on a post, and there's a flash widget from Google where you just plug your number in and then Google will call you and kind of save you a dime, unless you're on a cell phone, because, you know, cell phones you pay no matter you call or receive, so it's minutes. So there's that. Let's see. You should check out sfsignal.com each and every week, each and every day. I mean, there's something different on the site every day. You've got the SF tidbits, you've got mind melds, you've got videos, you've got the columns from our irregulars, tons and tons of stuff on there. All the time. So you should definitely check out sfsignal.com. Follow John D on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal. Now he tweets stuff. He tweets links. He tweets funny stuff. I mean, you name it, it's on there. If you're looking for me online, I appreciate that. Everything I do is under ATFMB, all things from my brain. So I'm at twitter.com/ATFMB. I'm at www.atfmb.com. That's the blog. And I'm at facebook.com/ATFMB, but I don't do a lot there, so just fair warning. Also check out functionalnerds.com for that podcast, and we've got some cool stuff over there on that website as well. I think that's it for me. We will have another podcast, another panel discussion next week, next Monday. And then I think next Thursday is our interview with, Stina Light. Stina Light. So that'll be next Thursday. I think that's it for me. My house is being invaded by yellow jackets this morning, so I am getting the heck out of here. Bye.